Just begin the Srimad Bhagavatam because of the Ishtagosi. We want to finish a little earlier. So we'll, for today, we'll skip the reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But I humbly petition and request all devotees who are sitting against the wall to please come forward and sit amongst the rest of the devotees. The Srimad Bhagavatam means more or less association. That way the message can be easier communicated. So please, everyone sitting against the wall, come forward. And those, unless those who have, who essentially have some infirmaries or problems that they can't come forward for some reason, then that's fine. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the 8th canto, chapter number 10. We're beginning a new chapter. This chapter is entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Iti Dhanavadaitye. Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Navindan Amritam Nirpa.
Navindan Amritam Nirpa.
Yukta Kamini Yatascha.
Yukta Kamini Yatascha.
Vasudeva Paranmukaha.
Vasudeva
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Navindan Amritam Nirpa.
Navindan Amritam Nirpa.
Yukta Karmani Yuktascha.
Yukta Karmani Yuktascha.
Vasudeva Paranmukaha.
Vasudeva Paranmukaha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Navidhan Amritam Nirpa.
Navidhan Amritam Nirpa.
Yukta Karmani Yuktascha.
Yukta Karmani Yuktascha.
Vasudeva Paranmukaha.
Vasudeva
Paranmukaha. Sri Sukha Uvacha.
Iti Dhanavadaitya.
Namritam namritam nipa.
Yukta karmani yuktascha. Vasudeva paranmukaha.
Vasudeva paranmukaha.
Sri
Sukha Uvacha.
Iti
Dhanavadaitya. Namritam namritam nipa. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Iti thus, Danava Daiteya, the asuras and the demons, Na, not, Avindan, achieve the desired result, Amritam, nectar, Nirpa, O King, Yukta, all being combined, Karmani, in the churning, Yataha, engaged with full attention and effort, Cha, and Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Paramukaha, because of being non-devotees. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, the demons and the daityas all engaged with full attention and effort in churning the ocean of milk. But, because they were not devotees of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. No purport, verse 2. Sadhyayityam vitam rajan payayitva svakam suram pasyatam savabhutanam yayo garura vahanaha. O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead had brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the Gadami gods, who are his dear devotees, he left the presence of them all and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. Text 3. Saptananam param riddhim drishvate diti nandanaha amrishyamana upektur devantrat yud yat yat yudaha. Translation. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. Thus, they began to march toward the demigods with raised weapons. Text 4. Tata suragana sarve sudaya pitam yai ditaha prati samyu yudhu shastrayar narayanan padasrayaha. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods, who were always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayan, used their various weapons to counteract the demons and a fighting spirit. Text 5. Tatra daivai suro nama rana parama durunaha rodhas yudhyanvato rajam tumulo roha harshanaha. Translation. O King, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk ensued because the demigods and between the demigods and the demons. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair on one's body stand on end. Text 6. Tantra yogyam sapta naste samradha manasorane sammasadya sibirbhanaya nijagnur vividan yudai. Both parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart. In enmity, they beat one another with swords, arrows, and varieties of other weapons. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are always two kinds of men in the universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets, like the sun and the moon, also have enemies like Rahu. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and the moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and the demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. Om Gyante Mirandasya Janagidara Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padati Kam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So, we're beginning a new chapter. In the concluding, preceding chapter, we have heard how due to the tricks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to favor demigods, who are his devotees, he incarnated in the most wonderful, amazing form of Mohini Murti and attracted the minds of the demons in such a way that they surrendered the pot of nectar to her and gave her full freedom to do whatever she felt with the nectar. Infatuated by her charm and her beauty, they simply sat there passively as the Lord was going from each demigod and giving him a cupful of nectar. Of course, one demon by the name Rahu, who was very intelligent, saw what was happening, and he disguised himself and sat on the side of the demigods in order to get the nectar. When the sun and the moon detected such a personality, they alerted the Lord, and the Lord immediately cut off his head. but not before he was able to drink the nectar up to his neck. And it is explained in this particular narration by Sukadeva Goswami that his head became immortal because of drinking the nectar, and his body collapsed. That head is a planet known as Rahu. In Vedic astrology, you find that there are two planets that are mentioned in Western astrology, Ketu and Rahu. These two planets are both aspects of the personality of Rahu, one being his head, and we were informed yesterday in class that the other one is his body, Ketu. And both have enmity against the Supreme, not the Supreme, but against the sun and the moon. So they're constantly trying to harass the sun and moon in different ways. But Lord Brahma intervened in order to give the sun and the moon some peace. So he said, you can intervene at certain times and harass them. So he gave them some leeway. So at various times, Rahu attacks the sun and the moon according to schedule, and that is called eclipse. Solar eclipse, lunar eclipse. We sometimes think the sun and the moon are passing over each other, but actually it's not. This is the mistaken understanding of the Western astrologies. Astrologers, or Western astronomers, scientists, they say that one is crossing in front of the other, and there's the eclipse. But actually, we learn from the authoritative scriptures of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to know something beyond the range of your senses, yatasi krishna namadi nabhavedrayam indriyam, seva mukhi hi jivados eva svayam paratyada. And that the senses have to be purified and understand things beyond them. So one has to be somewhat free from all material contamination to understand things beyond the range of the senses. Then the senses actually become purified and they become transcendental. But until that stage actually happens, then one has to take authority. Of course, even with purified senses, there are still things one cannot understand that are beyond the range of the senses. That is the activities and pastimes of Krishna. But one can understand it intuitively through revelation by the means of devotional service. But those who want to understand knowledge in general have to get knowledge from authority. Without accepting higher authority, one cannot understand. So it's a question of who do we accept, the scientist, or do we accept Srimad Bhagavatam? We understand from history and from past experience, the scientists are always changing their theories. They're always coming up with some new ideas, and they're negating and nullifying and their previous findings with newer and newer information. So it's like hypothesis. But science means to give some tangible evidence of fact. So it is not science. It's simply theory and hypothesis. Science means conclusion to a hypothesis. And therefore, really, in one sense of the term, they are not scientists. Because they cannot give definite evidence. They can say, perhaps, maybe, we think, or this is what we understand so far. So we cannot accept such information that is coming from imperfect senses and due to mental speculation. We have to accept information that is coming from the perfect authority. Evam paramparam praptam evam rajasa vedu. And that knowledge comes from the Supreme Lord through the parampara system. Srimad Bhagavatam was written by Srila Vyasadeva himself, who is a partial manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is given this information by his realization in devotional service and his connection and empowerment from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is Vyasadeva's position. So we understand truth from those who know truth. And therefore Srimad Bhagavatam is the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we hear such fantastic stories that come from Srimad Bhagavatam, they appear to be from some ordinary mentality, some like fiction, or some imagination, or some allegorical ideas in order to bring about a philosophical conclusion. But actually Srimad Bhagavatam is fact. This is all fact. If it's not fact, then what is the purpose of performing devotional service? Devotional service is understood through realization and not through speculation or conclusions based on sensual observation. In other words, you get the knowledge when you perform devotional service. You realize this knowledge. When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and due to your advancement in spiritual life, you realize what you read. It becomes a realization. Just like when you eat, you realize the taste of the food. You realize that you're feeling happy and stronger by eating. So in the same way, Srimad Bhagavatam, as the devotee makes advancement in spiritual life, gradually he can realize the truth. So these things appear to be, for the nearby devotee, just some stories or allegories, but actually they are factual accounts that happen in different realms of existence. Here we are speaking of the heavenly realm. This is in the heavenly realm. So these things are happening on all aspects of level of creation. So we don't know. We have to accept that authority which is the most perfect. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. It is none different than Krishna. Another interesting point here is that what's happening now? The demons become somewhat disturbed. The demigods have gotten the nectar, right? They want the nectar too. So they become angry. So when demons see their interests slighted, what do? They immediately become angry. And what did they do when they're angry? They attack the demigods. So it's explained in Srimad Bhagavad Gita that there are two types of people. There are those who are demoniac and those who are godly. Suras and asuras. Devas and daityas or danavas. Here it is mentioned here there are two kinds of the demons. There are demons and what is called asuras, or daityas and danavas. Just like there are varieties of people in different categories, even within demons, there are different kinds of demons. They have their own clubs, their own, you know, rules and regulations for becoming nice demon. You have to follow the demon parampara to become a good demon. You have to take initiation into anger, lust, greed, and envy. When you pass these things and have full-blown manifestations of these qualities, you can become a first-class leader of the demons. So, the demons also have their clubs. So, they became envious of the Lord. Envious of the demigods, and they attacked. Srila Prabhupada explains that sometimes devotees think the heavenly realm is so nice. Sometimes we think, we read about the heavens, how people live for long lives, and how people have beautiful bodily features, how people have great intelligence, freedom from disease. They have all these facilities in the higher planetary systems. But it is explained here that there is some misery there. That periodically throughout the history of the existence in the heavenly realms, the demons attack sometimes. And the demigods have to fight in order to protect the universal management. Just like here on this planet sometimes. You find that sometimes the government has to defend its position against unscrupulous persons. But in the heavenly realm it's much more full-blown in the sense that their demons are more organized there. They have better organization. So, it's not so always so peaceful in the heavenly planets. There is these fights going on. So Srila Prabhupada explains that this battle between the demigods and the demons, or the asuras and the asuras, is an eternal, perpetual manifestation of existence. It's going on today. It'll always go on. There are two classes of persons. Those who want to serve the Lord and use the property of the Lord for the Lord's service and for glorifying the Lord, and those who want to take the Lord's property and enjoy it for themselves. These are two types of persons, the demons and the devotees. So there's an enmity, a constant, perpetual, eternal, it's not just temporary, it's an eternal enmity between these two classes of persons, and sometimes big fights go on, even on this planet. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was pointing out one time in a morning walk in 1975. He was explaining this one principle. It was in Mayapur. It was in May of 75. And all the senior leaders of the Hare Krishna movement were there. All the top devotees in the movement were there. It was one of the most important morning walk conversations. And Prabhupada began to speak about what they labeled the conversation called World War III. He said, soon there will be another major world war. And he started to speak very specifically. And he started to talk about the capitalists and the communists. He says, the communists are very eager to kill the capitalists, and the capitalists are very eager to get rid of the communists. So he said, this fight is perpetually going on. Deva Asura, he said. But then someone brought up the point, you know, well, which one is which, you know? Prabhupada said, basically, they're both demons. Even nowadays, you know, the communists and the capitalists and the leaders of both governments, and they are both infested with demoniac principles and propensities and leadership. And that it's not a matter of one against the other. It's demons fighting demons in this case. Demons fighting demons. Like that. So, this is a constant battle going on between the demigods and the demons. Now when we read this, sometimes a person will pick up Srimad Bhagavatam, and you read the accounts of these fights. As we will go into this chapter, you'll see there's a very, very detailed explanation of the scene between the fighting. The actual battle between the different forces of the demons and the demigods on both sides, with very detailed descriptions of what's happening. So you might say, well, this is a religious scripture. That all this fighting going on. Not only fighting, but very, very graphic descriptions of, you know, heads being severed and bodies being mutilated and smashed to pieces. Right? So just like if you turn on your TV, you see the same thing, right? But we always condemn TV, right? We can say, stay away from TV. It's all violence and sex. But what we're reading about? Mohini Murthy, right? She's charming the demigods with her bodily features. So there's sex. And then there's fighting, or war. So sex and violence. It's there in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, what kind of scripture is that? Do you want to read that stuff? But actually, there's a difference. When we engage our minds and hearts in hearing about the mundane violence and sex of this material world, we become polluted by that. Our lusty desires increase, and our violent propensities also increase. When we hear about the sexual exploits and about the military or demoniac or whatever kind of violence we see on the televisions and the movies and the newspapers, it just arouses and increases our lusty and violent propensity. So therefore, for devotees, we stay away from that stuff. We shun this type of exposure to these things because they just enhance our attachment to these bad qualities. They arouse and excite these things. But when you read Srimad Bhagavatam and hear about how Krishna is killing the demons, just like when he was fighting against Jarasandha, 17 times he destroyed his entire army. And there's a very detailed description of the killing. It is explained that Krishna was killing the armies so powerfully that there were rivers of blood. And then there were headless corpses floating in the rivers. And it looked like tortoises floating in an ocean. And they were like elephants. They looked like islands floating in the ocean of blood. And it was explained that people were like knee-deep in blood, bodies floating around. Very descriptive. You hear this in Srimad Bhagavatam. Or if you read Mahabharata, right? One of the most favorite pastimes that devotees like to read is the Mahabharata. For 18 days, very detailed description of the fighting that's going on. Right? And sometimes you're reading it, you can't put it down. It's like so exciting, the fighting. That kind of exposure to violence is purifying. That is purifying. When we hear about the transient, those who are fighting on religious principles or the violence that is engaged by the Lord or the Lord's devotees, that purifies us from these tendencies. We become free from the violent tendencies when we hear about these things. So when the materialists display their stories and their different war advertisements, it just increases our lust, increases our propensities for these things. But when we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam about the fight between the demons and the demigods, or how Krishna just dispatched so many demons, it's like in the fight against Jarasandha. Krishna was killing all the armies except for Jarasandha. He wouldn't kill Jarasandha. Why didn't he kill Jarasandha? Because what is Krishna's mission in the material world? Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamiyam pravitranayam sadunam vinasanaya saduskritam, to annihilate the demons. So Krishna was allowing Jarasandha to go back and build his armies up each time so he could come back with more and more soldiers who were all demoniac forces. So Krishna was just constantly ridding the world of all these demons. He came, he killed so many demons. So unlimited, millions and millions and millions. Nobody, even the greatest demon in today's popular TV or movie, can't compare to Krishna in killing. Krishna is the best in everything. He can annihilate entire populations with no problem. And he enjoys it. And those who hear about it, they also enjoy it, if they're devotees, that is. If they're not devotees, then they get bewildered. So when we hear about the stories in Srimad Bhagavatam, we actually become purified from these tendencies, and we actually feel happy. It is when Krishna kills, and when the demigods are victorious over the demons, the devotees become enlivened. Devotees become enlivened when demons are killed. And devotees are by nature peaceful, right? What is this? What is the actual quality of a devotee? He is Trinadapi Sanichena Tayorapi Sayishina Mahanina Mahanadena Kirtaniya Sadarahi. He's by nature humble, tolerant, free from pride, and willing to give all respects to others. That's the nature of a devotee. But when he hears demons being killed, he becomes very happy. He becomes very happy when they're killed by Krishna. Of course, we don't go out and kill demons. That is not our business. Because, especially in today's Western society. But there's a class of men called Kshatriyas who are meant to protect against demoniac forces. So when demons are killed, devotees become enlightened. Just like when Krishna was killing in Vrindavan, what happened? The demigods in the higher planets, they were cheering. They were throwing flowers. And the cowherd boys, they were throwing flowers down. And they were falling from the sky. And then they were beating their drums, kettle drums, and mridangas, and coals, and all these different various drums. And it was like a symphony in the higher planets when Krishna was killing demons. And the cowherd boys were saying, "Well done! Well done! Hey!" There's one story in this killing of Dhenukasura. It's a wonderful story. How this one demon, who was cursed by the Rasa Muni to become an ass, he was actually the son of Bali Maharaj. And he was parading around in front of Durvasa Muni's ashram in a very licentious and a very not a very improper way. He was acting like a fool, and he was sporting with young ladies, and he was doing all kinds of mischievous stuff right in front of Durvasa Muni's ashram. So Durvasa Muni, he's partial incarnation of Shiva. He became a little angry. So he cursed him. He said, "You want to act like an ass? Okay, then become an ass." So he cursed him to become an ass. So he became the ass demon in Krishna Leela. So what was the story? They were in the forest, and they had taken over a section of the forest called Tanava, where the best fruits in all the forest were. And the cowherd boys were wanting to go into that area of the forest to enjoy the nice fruits, but they couldn't go because all the demons headed by Deinakasura, when they had captured this forest, nobody could go in there. And so they kind of complained to Krishna and Balaram. So Krishna and Balaram came. So Balaram was standing there, and he walked right into the forest, and he started picking the fruits and started to eat them. So when these asses, headed by Deinakasura, they saw it, Balaram was, "What is he doing? This is our forest. These are our fruits. Who does he think he is?" Of course, Balaram can do whatever he wants. He's Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this ass demon, he came up and he kicked Balaram right in the chest with all his force. And Balaram just looked at him like, "Don't bother me. I'm eating fruit." "Who is this guy? Come back later." He didn't even faze him. And so again he kicked him. Of course, the story was that finally Balaram picked him up and it just swung him around. Swung him around so fast. And then he was swinging, Krishna started, they started, all the other demon asses started to attack Balaram. And then Krishna jumped into the fight. And then he got the asses, and they were just twirling these ass demons. They were just charging. And then while they were twirling him around, they were they lost their life. And they were throwing him up in the trees, and they were hitting the fruits, and all the fruits were falling down so the cowherd boys could get the fruits without having to climb into trees. And everybody was saying, "Well done, well done, well done." So everybody enjoys when Sri Krishna and Lord Balaram. Why did Balaram kill Deinakasura? Why not Krishna? Does anybody know that reason? The story is that Deinakasura was a son of Bali Maharaj. And Krishna vowed that, he told Prahlad Maharaj, "I will never kill anyone within your family because you are my dear devotee. Anyone who comes from you, Prahlad Maharaj, I will not in any way harm." And Prahlad he took over the throne of his father. He became the king of the demons. So there were many demons born in the family of Prahlad Maharaj, although he was a great devotee. So Krishna promised Prahlad that, "I will never kill anyone in your family." So he arranged for Balaram to do the work. So they have some transcendental pact between themselves. They get the job done without breaking the promises. So Balaram and Krishna, they work very close together. So these are wonderful pastimes. When we hear about Krishna killing the demons, everyone becomes happy. When the demigods defeat the demons, everyone becomes happy. But there's a class of sahajyas who claim to be devotees of the Lord, and they want only to read Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with the gopis. They like the amorous sporting activities between Krishna and the gopis. They like to hear those stories. But when it comes to Krishna killing demons, they're not too enthusiastic. But actually, devotees, we understand that those pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan with the gopis, of course, devotees should read about them and hear about them and try to absorb our consciousness in them. But they are equally as wonderful as Krishna killing demons. There's no difference between the two. In fact, you cannot appreciate those pastimes unless you can actually appreciate Krishna and all his other aspects of his existence. In fact, before you can understand these higher mellows of Krishna and Vrindavan, you have to read Krishna as the creator of the universe. You have to read Krishna as the Parameshwara, or the Paramatma, or the supreme manifestation of creation. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the creation. Before you can understand 10th canto, you have to understand 1st and 2nd canto. And then you will understand that same person who is the creator of this entire cosmic creation, which is so full of variety and so wonderful, is the same person that is playing on his flute, dancing with his young gopi girlfriends in Vrindavan, and sporting with his cowherd friends and taking chastisement from his mother. That same personality. There's no difference. But you can't understand those unless you first approach Krishna as the supreme power. Then, when you can accept Krishna in all his aspects of majesty and power, and understand him as the creator, then you can gradually become more and more understanding of his transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. And of course, that is ultimately the goal of our devotional service, is to enter into those pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And that is the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that. So gradually we should study and read very, very carefully these scriptures. Srimad Bhagavatam is not meant simply only in the morning for a few hours. Of course, that is important, and it's a requirement to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's explained that the great souls, devotees who actually relish Krishna consciousness, read Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Every day. We should absorb our mind from just reading. We may not be able to understand the deep meanings of a lot of the philosophy and what is actually being explained to us. But simply by being in contact with this transcendental message, one's consciousness becomes purified. Just by reading. Just by gradually exposing ourselves to this transcendental literature. So we should read these books. At least 2 hours a day, minimum. This is part of our devotional service to the Lord. And of course, Srila Prabhupada put his life and soul in his Bhaktivedanta purports. He would spend the wee hours of the morning sitting there, very, very absorbed in trying to explain the philosophy in such a way that we could be presented for the Western mind. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, they have all given commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada took those, but he combined it with the preaching in the West, the mentality of those in the West. And he added his own realizations and applied it to time, place, and circumstance. And those are the Bhakti Vedanta purports. And Prabhupada gave practically his blood and his life in order. He put his heart and soul. If we read these books every day and study them, try to understand them, read the verses, learn the verses, preach to others, we'll find that this Krishna consciousness becomes so wonderful. It is a wonderful process. It is an exciting process. There's so much to Krishna consciousness. And the basis of that is through the philosophy. So therefore, when we hear these transcendental narrations of Krishna, not only do we become enlightened, but we become purified. We become purified. And the benefit of becoming purified is that you can realize higher and higher things. As we become purified, higher and higher truths and knowledge also become revealed through the process of purification. That is Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so perhaps we'll stop here. We do have to go on to the Istagosi, but we do have approximately maybe 6 or 7 minutes. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Maharaj Chaitanya Prabhu?
I'm reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam something about there's no difference between Krishna and his paraphernalia.
Yes.
Then could you say that this temple here is no different than Krishna?
Yes. Krishna, his abode, his paraphernalia, his form, his name, his pastimes, everything in connection with Krishna is also Krishna. This is the abode of Krishna. And the temple is none different than Krishna.
It's all
yes. Krishna is residing here. Aditi is Krishna. Aditi is not different than Krishna. Aditi is not a representative of Krishna. It's Krishna. Krishna is personally here. He's right there on the altar. That's him. Anybody have any doubt? It's Krishna. He's come in the form of his deity, but he's none different than his deity. So when you're standing in front of the altar, that's Krishna. So this is his house. He's here. Prabhupada said these temples are what did he call him? What was the exact term he said? He called them Vaikuntha. Yeah, Vaikuntha, something like that. They're none different than Vaikuntha. He said, ISKCON is Krishna, temples are Vaikuntha. When you come into this temple, you're in a different element. Out there, beyond the borders of the temple, is the material world. When you come in here, it's the spiritual world. Of course, that is all due to the consciousness of the devotees. The more the consciousness is there, the more we can perceive that. But ultimately, because Krishna is here, by definition, it is ultimately non-different than Krishna. It's the spiritual world in the material world. And there's a practical example of that. Just like when you go to any country, there's an embassy. There's embassies, right? You know what an embassy is? So, just like in America, we might have the Indian embassy. So if you go into the Indian embassy, where are you? You're in India. Wherever embassy you walk into, you're under the jurisdiction of that. So these temples are like embassies of the spiritual world. This is non-different than Vaikuntha. So the residents also are residents of the Vaikuntha realm. So we should see it like that. Does it work to your question? I think that's the subject for Ista Gosti. That'll be coming up. I don't want to expand on it right now. I'll be beginning Ista Gosti before it officially begins. But just to take your point, to lay the foundation, cleanliness is non-different. They say cleanliness is next to godliness. We don't say that. We say cleanliness is godliness. A Brahmin, one of the qualities of Brahmins is clean, cleanliness. That means, Prabhupada said, two aspects of cleanliness. Internally, we chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare. That is internal. And external, we keep nice, clean clothes. We take baths regularly, twice a day, minimum twice. And we keep everything neat and clean in our areas. That's generally the principles of a Brahmin, and by nature is clean. One of his main qualities is cleanliness. Truthfulness and cleanliness are these two of the main qualities of a Brahmin. So we can go into the ramifications of your question in a few moments. But generally, these are just some principles. We have to be clean. And we should study Srila Prabhupada's statements on these principles about cleanliness for ashrams personally. If you just follow Prabhupada's statements, they're all there. We don't have to come up with any new things. It's all there. Prabhupada he spoke a lot about cleanliness, importance of it. So we just follow that. Okay, anything else? Any other comments, questions? Okay. We have 1 minute and 10 seconds left. Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. This song describes the intimacy of the aspects of the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. Jaiharatha Madhava is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Kunja Vihari, he's always sporting in the groves of Braj, Kunj. Gopi Jana Vallabha, he is the sinister, or the focus of the gopis. He is the very dearmost to the gopis. Braja Jana Ranjana. He's always sporting in the groves of Vrindavan. Jasoda Nandana. He is the bliss of Mother Yasoda. Braja Jasoda Nandana, Braja Jana Ranjana. Okay. We forgot. Gopi Janavallava Girivanadhari. He's the lifter of Govardhan Hill. Krishna is lifting his Govardhan Hill. And the last line, Jamuna Kiravanachari. He's always playing on the banks of the Jamuna River. Jamuna Tiravanachari. What is the last line? Jamuna Tiravanachari. What is the last line? Jamuna Tiravanachari. Huh?
That's it.
Okay. So we'll sing that song. Please, everyone, try to follow. I'll sing very slowly. You can all follow. Jai Radha Madhava, Jai
Thank you.
Jagacharya, Astudarasattva Sri Sri Manhidavai Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki, Harinam Sankirtan Ki, Radhakanta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Premanandi. Glories to the Asamu devotees, glories to the Asamu devotees, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Hare Krishna. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, canto number 8. Verse number 7 through. Please repeat. Sankhya Torya Mirdanganam Beri Namarinam Mahan Hasti Asva Rata Patinam Nandatam Nishvash. I'm sorry, Nishvano Bhavat Sankyaturyad Mirdanganam Eridamarinam Mahan Hastya Swaratapatiam Nadatam Nishvano Bhavat Sankyaturya Mirdanganam Veridama Rinam Mahan Hasya Swarata Patinam Naratam Nisvanho Bhavat Sankyaturyad Mirdanganam Veridama Rinam Mahan Hastya Swarata Patinam Nadatam Nishvano Bhavat.
Sankhya Turna Vidangana
Nādatam nisvano bhava. Anyone else? Any of your guests would like to try? Want to try chanting the mantra? Sankyaturam idanganam. Beri damna rinam mahan. Kaswaraste patinam. Nadatam nisvano bhava. Anyone else? Ladies? Sankhya of conch shells, Turya of big bugles, Mirdanganam and of drums, Beri of bugles, Tamarinam of kettle drums, Mahan great and tumultuous, Hasti elephants, Asva of horses, Ratapatinam of fighters on chariots or on the ground, Nadatam all of them making sounds together, Nishvana a tumultuous sound, Abhavat so became. Translation: the sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, berries, and damaris, that is kettle drums, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers who were both on the chariots and on foot, were tumultuous. There's no purport. Rati no rati bistatra pati bisaha pataya haya haya ibas chebya samasanjanta samyuge. On the battlefield, the chariots fought with opposing charioteers, the infantry soldiers with opposing infantry, the soldiers on horseback with opposing soldiers on the horsebacks, and the soldiers on the backs of elephants with enemy soldiers on elephants. And this way the fighting took place between equals. So we're reading here about a situation, there's a battle going on, or about to begin actually, between the devas, the asuras, and the demons, the asuras. And this is right after the demigods were given the nectar of immortality by the Supreme Lord. This is during the churning of the milk ocean. And the story unfolds is that the demons, seeing that the demigods had cheated them out of their share of the nectar. Of course, to give the nectar to the demons means to give poison in the hands of a crazy person, or to give milk to a serpent. When you give milk to a serpent, the milk turns into poison simply by the touch of the lips of the serpent. So the demigods were given the nectar by the Lord himself, and the demons were deprived. And the demons, seeing themselves being cheated or deprived, they decided to have a war. So they attacked the demigods. So now we're beginning a big battle. It's explained that the nature of the living entities in the material world are of two natures generally. Of course, we may subdivide it into more than two, but there is generally two. Those who are for God and those who are against God. Those who live by moral and religious principles and try to dedicate their lives and activities in the service of the Lord. And those who live simply for their own selfish sense gratification and try to take the property of the Lord simply for their own enjoyment. And these two classes of persons are sometimes categories of Sura Asura. Krishna, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, gives a very clear explanation of the qualities of both. But he mainly explains very clearly the qualities of those who are demoniac. And he explains pravittim cha nirvittim cha. They don't know what to do, nor what not to do. They follow no rules, no regulations, nor cleanliness, truth, or even proper behavior is found in those persons who are classified as asuras, or demons, asuras. And this class of living entities is by nature angry, envious of the Lord, and always causing disturbance within the world. Krishna comes, he says in Bhagavad Gita, the 7th verse in the 4th chapter, Pravitranayam sarunam vinasanaya chaduskritam, in order to get rid of the demons. Because demons are like a pinprick in society. And when that pinprick grows into a thorn, it becomes an impossible situation for people to live happily and nicely. So the demons are always causing disturbances. The nature of the demons, he's very envious. He's always angry. He's always thinking how to get more money, how to enjoy sense gratification in the form of the opposite sex to as much limit as I can possibly obtain. They are attracted to intoxication, excessive sleep, madness, and always constantly working against religious principles in the world. If you clearly apply these principles to today's society, you will see pretty much this is what today's world is somewhat governed by. That His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada explains that society is meant to give an opportunity for the living entities to obtain the goal of life. Governments and organizations which consider themselves administration of the population are meant to gradually do two things. One, minister to the needs of the population as far as material needs are concerned, as far as education and food and proper roadways, whatever is necessary for society to function in a social way. But that is not the only function of government. That is one of the functions. And actually, it's their secondary functions. Government is meant, leadership is meant to be Rajarsi. Great kings in the Vedic times, such as Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Prithu, Maharaj Yudhisthira, the list goes on and on. Maharaj Bhart, the whole world is named Bhart Varsha after Maharaj Bhart, the illustrious son of Rishabdev, the incarnation of God. These great kings ruled by religious principles, and the population was happy, and they were making progress on the path towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So society is meant to give an opportunity for the living entities to raise them up gradually by providing whatever needs they may have in order for their spiritual development, and to facilitate those needs as much as possible. Otherwise, it's illegal to collect taxes and not provide the needs of the people. It's simply a form of stealing and cheating. So you see, today's society is not governed by such. The entertainment industry, the communication networks, the educational institutions, and the political arenas are simply promulgating ideas of how you can enjoy your senses more and more. That's the whole propaganda of today's society. Eat, drink, be merry, have as much material possessions as you can possibly acquire, and because the whole goal of life is to enjoy your senses. But what does Bhagavad Gita say? Krishna says very clearly in Bhagavad Gita, Yehi sam sparsaja bhoga dukkha yonya evite avanta vanta kuntaya Teshu Brahmate Buddha, that those who consider sense gratification the goal of life They actually are planting their future misery. Because sense gratification ultimately leads to suffering. Whatever amount of sense gratification the living entity enjoys, one must suffer in the same proportion, and sometimes even more. And that is the nature of material energy. Whatever material happiness you get that much material distress. It's a coin with two sides. It comes not it comes proportionally, but doesn't come at the same time. It comes in phases. We get the happiness, we get the distress, but we get both. So the living entity is not meant to simply enjoy the body and the senses. That is not the purpose of life. The senses are meant to be used in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikena. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevana Bhakta Uchchate. That the senses are meant to serve the supreme master of the senses, the supreme Lord, Lord Shiva Krishna. That is the purpose of the senses. And the senses, in contact with the material energy, are sources of misery. And senses in contact with the spiritual energy are sources of happiness and pleasure, and sources of knowledge and illumination. So you see, in today's world, if we carefully study, that pretty much the entire propaganda, society and population and direction of the goal of life is based on irreligion and demoniac principles. No one can refute that statement. The whole idea of more is better, right? More cars, more sense gratification, more food, more clothes, more. More-ism is the ism. The more you have, the more you're considered to be successful by society standards. And if you have less, you're not considered to be with it. So what do they teach? You just have to continue to get more. But we see that the more the people have, the more you become preoccupied with these things, and the more one becomes attached and bound up by trying to enjoy them, trying to take care of them. So the process of spiritual life means simple living, high thinking. Today's society is high living, no thinking. Nobody knows how to think anymore. The television thinks for you. You turn on the TV and everybody tells, they tell you exactly how to think and what to like and dislike and how to mold your life in such a way as to facilitate your needs as far as your mind and senses are controlled. But as soon as for 1 minute the living entity stops trying to enjoy sense gratification, what happens? He becomes miserable. Becomes miserable. That moment of gap between the different series of types of sense gratification, the mind becomes disturbed. Can't become peaceful for a moment. People sit down, they fall asleep. You shut the television off, they stare at the wall. The mind is nothing in the brain. It's cow dung. Straw. It's all. Or maybe there is some knowledge of how the material world works. Everybody has, they can tell you all the components of a computer, how the computer works, and so many of this, that, and it's the Iron Age, machinery. Everybody knows about machinery. A man can tell you how a car works and all the problems of the car and what to do and how to fix up the car. They can tell you the latest computers and the different hard drives and the different magazines that sell it on. This is called Sudra, less than Sudra. Brahminical society is society which teaches that the goal of life, atato brahma jigyasa, that actually we're not these bodies. This is actually progressive society. But we see in today's society, what do they teach? Education means to somehow facilitate the needs of society where people can make money. That's all. Education is geared simply to propagate a demoniac society. That is the basis of education. To somehow or other fill the post in order for we can keep the war machine going, we can keep the politicians and everybody can have as much material things as you want. Give the people as much as they want, let them be quiet so we can control the government, we can control everything. That's the whole philosophy, that is the whole propaganda of today's society. Nobody has time for God, or if they have some some inclination towards God slightly. They don't know who God is or what God looks like or what he does or what's my relationship to God. Nobody knows anything. You speak to an average person about philosophy and about God consciousness, everybody's got their own speculative opinion. It's like this, maybe, I read this. Nobody knows anything. But if you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains it. Aham sarvasya prabhavama tat sarva prabhartante. I am the source of everything. The spiritual material worlds. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. One of the key verses in Bhagavad Gita. If you want to know me, he says, perform devotional service. Those who want to know me, engage in my devotional service. If you want to understand me, offer something to me. When people offer something to God, not to understand God, why do they offer something to God? Because they want God to give them something back. Right? Give me a new car. Give me good education. Give me a nice wife. Give me a nice husband. Give me a place to stay. Give me some food. Give. So God is a give machine, right? It's like you go to the store and you give the money and the guy man gives you something, right? So what do you get back? What you get. So Krishna is like a merchant. He set up business, you know. He's got a stand on the corner. He's selling material benefits. And everyone is, the lines in the churches, the lines in the mosques, the lines in the temples are big. Everyone wants God to give them something material. And God will do that most of the time. But that's not his real. He does that because, you know, he fulfills our desires. But ultimately, to approach God for material things is like approaching a wealthy man and asking for, can you give me $5? He's prepared to give you whatever you want, and you're asking for $5. He said, take whatever you want. And you say, no, I just need $5. No, I'm in possession of so much wealth. So that is the little bit of spirituality or religiousness we see in society. People are simply going to God for material things. But beyond that, most people are rejecting God. They're simply engaged in material society. So it's not a very good time. This is called Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel, the age of hypocrisy, the age where demoniac and irreligious principles go on as the standard for material progress. Just now, I heard just recently, maybe you all heard about a year ago or 2 years ago, Clinton was involved in some kind of, our illustrious president, some kind of sexual scandal. And then, you know, they made a big court case out of it. Now, I just heard recently, people are saying, well, his popularity is becoming greater and greater. Because he's like one of us. That's what we do. Why should we criticize him? He's no different than us. So therefore, why should we be hypocritical? That's basically, the leadership reflects the nature of the people of today. Same thing. So, you know, who cares if he had a sexual relationship with, you know, that's what everybody's doing. It's normal. We want a normal president. We don't want somebody abnormal. He's normal. Right? But where's the morality? No morality. They're trying to redefine morality nowadays. Redefine morality. Now they got the gay liberation movement, right? Bhagavatam explains that Lord Brahma, when he was creating the universe and creating all the progeny, he created two living beings from his backside. And what did they do? Brahma was creating the different progenies, some out of his mind, some out of his intelligence, different parts of his body, all emanations of the different aspects within creation. Narada came from his mind. He was the incarnation of transcendental knowledge, the four Kumaras. So Brahma was creating from his body different aspects of the creation. So from his back came two demons. And as soon as they were born, what did they do? They chased after Brahma for sex life. So it's explained in that particular series. And this was the beginning of homosexuality. It's considered to be demoniac. It's not normal. Sometimes people ask us, what do you think of homosex? We say, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. Four principles you have to follow. We don't even allow it outside of marriage. Only in marriage, and in marriage only for the procreation of children. So our answer is pretty much that sex life needs to be regulated according to religious principles. Kamosvi Bharatasabha, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am that sex life that is not contrary to religious principles, meant for propagation and procreation of God-conscious children. That is the understanding. It's meant for procreation, not for recreation. That's what Krita scriptures say. People use it for recreation and what happens? We have so many problems. Broken homes, diseases, abortions. Speak of the consequences and the financial drain that these things bring about. Single parents. Because people don't understand God's simple formula how to live happily and nicely in this world. We need to take care of our responsibilities, but ultimately, the goal of life is to become God conscious. So they have in today's society, not only do they not follow normal standards of morality, they're trying to recreate morality based on demoniac principles. Now, homosexuality is okay, lesbianism, they got the lesbian movement, the gay movement. What else? There's so many other movements in today's world. Everybody has a movement based on some kind of, some kind of irreligious or sinful activity. Why restrict us? We can do anything we want because that is what freedom is. To restrict someone to do anything means to inhibit their natural expression of self needs. Just like you might say, okay, then let a child do anything they want. Baby's born, don't give it any guidance, don't give it any education, just let it do what it wants. What will it be? It'll probably grow up to be, deranged, a misfit. Children, you guide. It's the same one. Religious principles or moral principles are guides to live proper, standard human forms of life. Human form of life means to follow rules and regulations. But this society, to do away with everything. The only regulation is get more. Right? Money, sex life, power, prestige. Everyone is looked up to according to these things. And if you're simple, if you're poor, if you're humble, you're considered to be a misfit.